two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy 2024! New year, new you, right? Let me guess. You're thinking about joining a new gym, starting a fad diet, buying that Theragun everyone's always yammering on about. I've got a better idea. Listen to my podcast. I'm Samantha Bee, writer, comedian, and host of Choice Words from Lemonada Media. This whole month of January, we're going to help you make better choices in 2024. We'll go beyond superficial hacks and get at the truth of how to lead a more meaningful life. Just search for Choice Words on your podcast player of choice and hit follow so you don't miss an episode. Now that is a good choice.
Lemonada.
And does it feel weird not having your mask on?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I'm vaccinated, right? So I'm like, well, the CDC says it's okay to not wear a mask if you're vaccinated. So I'm like, why is everyone still all masked up?
Do you have any concerns now that people are, even though people are vaccinated, but do you have any concerns about getting back to normal?
Do I have concerns? Not really, no. Because, I mean, the CDC and all the health departments, they say you can go around without your mask now. And so I believed them. So, no.
You believe the CDC. That's so nice. You too, you believe the CDC?
I'll take into consideration what CDC guidelines are, and then I'll make a decision for me.
Welcome to In the Bubble. This is your host, Andy Slavitt. The CDC says this, the CDC says that. Well, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, the director of the CDC, is with us today. What they say matters. The words we say matter. When people like the words we say, they're happy. When people don't like the words we say, they get mad at us. And I know this because I sent out my most controversial tweet this week. My most controversial tweet. And I'm going to talk about it with Dr. Walensky because now I want to know whether what I said was responsible, irresponsible, fear-provoking, etc. But I got called Trumpist. And the truth is, I think there were some valid points being raised by people. I don't think people always raise them on Twitter in the most constructive way 100% of the time, but that's okay. I'm a semi-public figure. But you'll see this very controversial tweet. My first question for her is to give me a rating on a scale of 1 to 10 whether or not it was the right thing to say. So your questions are what we're going to focus on with Dr. Walensky. And it's good that we have somebody to ask tough questions to. Your questions range from things like, what to do if you've only had one vaccine shot? What to do if you've had the Johnson & Johnson shot? And guess what? She gives us an answer. What to do if you're thinking about traveling? What to do if you have kids under 12? How at risk are they? All of the things that we want to go to the CDC for. We want to go to an authority for. And the whole context of this week's episodes are about how do we rebuild public trust, trust in government. How do we earn trust back? I would observe that President Biden put two people in Jen Psaki and Dr. Walensky in front of the public who are highly trusted, trustworthy, honest people. Doesn't mean we're not going to be frustrated by what we hear sometimes, but it does mean that we're going to get the truth. And they're both trying to earn back a trust and a respect for government that has been diminished over time. It's been diminished over time, not just because of the Trump administration, it's been diminished over time. And on top of that, Dr. Walensky has to battle with the fact that her agency has come under criticism. Scientists and experts have come under criticism. And part of her job is to figure out how to fix that. We're getting close to 4th of July. The president has promised that on the 4th of July, his goal would be that you will be able to gather in small groups, outdoors, without a mask. And we've already achieved that as a country. So thank you, President Biden. Thank you, tens of thousands of vaccinators. Thank you, people manufacturing these vaccines and driving these vaccines around the country. Thank you, who've been vaccinated, for doing your part. Thank you even to the people who haven't been vaccinated but are thinking about it seriously and are contemplating it the right way. All right, that's enough of the thanks. Now let's go get your most important questions answered. Let's get the truth out of Dr. Rochelle Walensky.
Hi.
Hi there.
Look at you, Andy. You look so relaxed.
Yeah, I just went for a workout. How about you?
Oh, yeah, me too. It was one up here. I thought so.
My last 24 hours, I got to tell you about it. I've been having this wrestling match, and I put forward a tweet, which has turned out to be the most controversial tweet I've ever made. And I did not think it was controversial when I made it. And maybe you could help be the judge, the honest judge and jury of this tweet, because it evoked like such a strong response. And I wasn't quite sure why. What I said was, it was a three-part tweet. The first part of the tweet, the one that provoked a lot of people, was, if you're vaccinated, the most important thing you can do right now is go live your best life and make up for lost time. There are far greater threats in your life than the Delta variant. So, and then I went and said, if you're not vaccinated, you should be monitoring Delta. Keep monitoring Delta closely. Now, if you were kind of going like, if you're like the fact checker and you're saying that's a 10 or that's a 1, it's a total lie. Like, where would you put that tweet? I admit it's not a perfect tweet, but where would you say it?
7 or 8.
7 or 8. Okay. That makes me feel better. I mean, so here's my point. Like, we went and did this interview with this guy who, it was a really moving interview. He was at a federal vaccination center, and he had just gotten vaccinated. And Dr. Lisa asked him, what is it you plan to do now that you've been vaccinated? And he said, you know what? I lost a family member to COVID. Now that I'm vaccinated, I could go back to my job, which is in food services. But you know what? I have some deferred dreams, and maybe I'm going to go back part-time and try to make a contribution to society. And it was one of those conversations, I listened to it, and I was very moved by it because I felt like here's somebody who the pandemic has caused to help rethink his priorities a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he was feeling a new set of energy. And so what I was trying to say is we've all lost a lot during the pandemic, and COVID's not gone, but it's becoming more and more of a manageable risk for people who've been vaccinated, and so it shouldn't overwhelm them. But people got very upset with that tweet.
So, and what was most of their upsetment around?
Well, one was about people who had kids, thought that was inappropriate.
Yeah.
People who were immunocompromised didn't like the tweet, which is very fair.
Fair.
And then there was just a general sense of Slavitz turned Trumpy and stuff that was a little nastier than that too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Twitter's not a nice place.
Yeah, it's not. But I mean, I think one of the things that's trying to help people to gauge is like, it's not like we're saying that there's any level of death that's acceptable that are preventable. But what we are saying is if you've been vaccinated and given the low prevalence right now and summer and all the people have suffered, what I was trying to say was go get the things in your life back that you missed.
You have permission to smile again, right? You have permission to do a few things. I mean, it's really extraordinary to like see people outside having fun. Like, it's been an extraordinary long time since we saw people enjoying themselves.
Right. And people feel like they need permission, or they feel guilty because they see what's suffering around the world. And also just coming out of something that for so long was such an existential threat, it's an adjustment to feel that. So I felt like telling people, hey, you know, it's okay. And indeed, your odds are quite low if you've been vaccinated of getting sick.
Right. And points are well taken with regard to immunosuppressed people, like this is where I sort of said 7 or 8, you know, like there are still places I wouldn't go. I'm vaccinated and healthy, but there are still places I would say, do I really need to do that? You know, in that place at this time.
Sure.
And still can enjoy yourself, right?
Yep. Yep. And I try to learn from the reaction as opposed to just digging my heels in. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fair that it hits some people the wrong way. Let me go through a quick couple of thoughts, like on what's your advice for people in the following types of situations.
Okay.
I've had one mRNA shot, but I haven't had my second shot yet because I feel like maybe I don't need it. What's your advice?
You should absolutely right now get your second shot. I mean, so always with caveats, like, did you have a bad reaction to your first shot? Or is there something you're specifically worried about? All of those sorts of things. But if it was just like, I'm just not sure that I want it. We are seeing data out of UK that basically showed that the breadth and depth of the immune response with the second shot, there's a reason it's a two-dose vaccine. And that some of these variants, including the Delta variant, which is here and rising rapidly, you get well more protection with the second shot than you did if you just had the first. So
that's a clear one.
Yes,
that's a clear one. If you had one shot.
That one's easy.
Go have the second one, unless, of course, the first one was so intolerable, in which case you should talk to your doctor probably, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Second scenario is you're fully vaccinated, but you've got kids under 12 that aren't. Are there any sets of precautions you recommend, or should people feel relatively comfortable without taking many precautions?
I think it depends. I would say if your kids are going out, they should be wearing masks. If you're going out without your kids, you probably don't need them and probably are at pretty low risk of bringing anything home. But there's also a modeling situation that I think is really important for parents and their children. So that's really going to depend on how the family dynamics go with that. When I think about how my kids, when they were young, if I was going out with them and I expected them to wear a mask, I would have worn a mask to model, even if I was vaccinated.
There are some moms who've reached out to me and listened to the show who have younger kids, and they're very worried. They're worried about the Delta variant. They're worried that they're not vaccinated. And when I look at the data, it looks to me like the risk of them getting COVID and getting sick is quite low. In fact, lower when I compare it to other causes of death or hospitalizations for children, lower than many of those other things. But I don't want to advise incorrectly. What would you say that the risks of both, with your taking your advice about, you know, wearing a mask, but beyond that, of them getting COVID or of them something serious happening if they get COVID?
So this is very much related to anybody's individual risk tolerance, which is hard for me to impose my risk tolerance on somebody else. Here's what I can tell you. If you've been duly vaccinated and you're going out to the grocery store or to do some standard errand, your risk of getting the disease is pretty low. Your risk of getting disease that you could potentially transmit in the household is also pretty low. And then your risk of getting your kids sick enough that they would have a bad outcome is low. And all of those would have to be true to have a bad outcome in your children. So you start multiplying those, and those are really small risks. They still may be too high for any mom to tolerate. I could appreciate that.
Sure. It's not just a data decision, as you say. It's, when it comes to our kids, there's no chances we want to take.
Right.
But just as looking at some data, like the number of deaths of kids, of people under 18 overall are in the couple of hundred. And the number of cases are quite low. And the prevalence out there is quite low. Now, that's not to say that there aren't other symptoms. And it's not to say that you want to get COVID, because you don't. But as people think about how to compartmentalize this and deal with this fear until such time as their kids can get vaccinated, the general sense that parents should have is this is not one of the great risks in their life right now, given all of the different hoops you just talked about having to go through in order to get
sick. Right. I think that that's true.
Okay, here's a tricky one, and it's one I'm sure you're getting. And I know you have an official answer to this, but I've had one shot of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The Delta variant is here. How should I think about it? And how should I think about what your official recommendation is, and then how that is being considered, it might change over time?
So my official recommendation is actually the truth, and that is we just don't know. So the official recommendation is because we don't know and we don't have data one way or another, we're not currently recommending it. Here's, I'll tell you what we do know and some places where I think people might veer from standard guidance. So the AstraZeneca vaccine is very similar to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It's not the same, but it's similar. In the UK against the Delta variant, the AstraZeneca vaccine did okay. It didn't do as well as the mRNA vaccines, but it did do quite well against preventing severe disease and death. So you might be more likely to get disease, but you might be still less likely to go into the hospital with it. So that's actually good news, but that's AZ and not Johnson & Johnson. We have every reason to believe Johnson & Johnson may actually work similarly with similar impact. Some people have said, you know, I'm just not going to tell anyone and I'm just going to get an mRNA vaccine. We don't really know what the boosting effect of an mRNA vaccine after Johnson & Johnson. We don't have a huge amount of data on the safety and the side effect profile of getting an mRNA vaccine after the Johnson & Johnson, or really the effectiveness of that approach. It's probably safe because these vaccines are generally safe to begin with. But there aren't any data to inform this one way or another. And so I could imagine somebody who is living in an area that they're immunosuppressed and they're living in an area with a lot of disease and how they might be worried, and their primary care doc might advise for that. But that's, as you said, not the standard right. recommendation.
But if someone you knew said, I'm going to get the mRNA vaccine because it's just I'm just too nervous, you wouldn't lay down in the tracks necessarily and say, this is a huge mistake.
Not with what I've seen so far.
Okay. And the numbers I remember, they're not fresh, was that the AstraZeneca was, what, 60% effective?
About 60%,
and then against hospitalization, it was, what, closer to 90?
80 to 90.
So, you know, if anything, getting a boost from that 80 to 90 to something higher is what we're talking about. And I think what I've heard you say is... no data on it, so the CDC can't say one way or the other. But you know, as people talk to their doctor, make their own decision, get informed, that's one of the options people are considering.
And be willing to risk these vaccines are extraordinarily safe, mm-hmm. extraordinarily safe. And yet there's a reactogenicity profile. People do get fevers, they get aches, they get headaches. And, you know, we have seen cases of myocarditis. So, you know, you have to be willing to take the risk benefit there.
Got it.
Is that incremental benefit worth that risk of unknown space?
Right. And, you know, generally speaking, I mean, this is one of the things you must run into a lot at running the CDC, is that people want to be told what to do in some cases. Like, this is what you should do. When the truth is, and I think the way you've phrased things is, we all have different risk tolerance. Some decisions feel obvious, like, should I get vaccinated in the first place? Or the one we started with, if I have one vaccine, should I get a second? And so important for people to understand some decisions, there's quite a lot of data. Other decisions are really a matter of personal judgment. And it must be somewhat frustrating that like people expect you to have an answer when none exists sometimes.
Well, and also because actually the data evolves. Like just yesterday, there was a study in the New England Journal about the transmission among household contacts of vaccinated people. So, you know, every day there are new data. And so we use that data as our priori knowledge for how we make these decisions. And we work that in. And that's really hard to keep informed.
It's hard for anybody to keep up with.
Yeah.
There's interesting, speaking of Delta variant, which has got to be absolutely killing Delta Airlines, that's the one that's landed on, is like, that prior immunity, what we're seeing is, tell me if I have this right, that the vaccines are showing themselves, if you take two of the mRNA in particular, to be quite effective against Delta. But prior immunity seems to be something that Delta has a better chance of evading. Is that in fact the case?
Yeah, I sort of think of prior immunity kind of like one dose of an mRNA vaccine. That's my sort of standard way of thinking about it. It gives you some breadth and depth, but not large breadth and depth. And that's really where the second dose really helps you out, which is why we're really encouraging people who have had one episode of disease, to get the vaccine, and to get, you know, to get both doses of the vaccine because of the breadth and depth. You know, we have seen, we saw in Brazil where people who had previously had disease were susceptible to disease with another variant. And that's what we're trying to avoid here by vaccinating people who have had disease before.
So the message there seems to be, if you've had COVID before, it's not your get out of jail free card. The vaccine is pretty darn close to your get out of jail free card, and you could pass go and collect $200, and you can get Boardwalk and a hotel, all for getting two vaccines. See, I'm used to marketing the vaccines.
Except that I usually play the iron in Monopoly, and so like I would say all the wrinkles are now.
Why the iron? Why the iron?
I don't know.
I was a car or the hat.
We're not all the way, like, I'm still kind of landing on Boardwalk with two hotels, you know?
you landed on Boardwalk with two hotels, yes. Some days are like that. And so what about, and the final one I'll throw out to you on the questions that people ask is around travel, international travel in particular. How should people be feeling about international travel? How should we as a country be thinking about international travel at this point?
I worry less on the international travel side about our travel corridors specifically, the planes themselves. It's a lot of the travel, and even in this country, was really around the activities you did when you traveled. You were out, you were meeting people, you were mixing people with people, you were in densely populated places and museums and all these other places where you're mixing with people a lot. I would pay attention. Well, certainly I would get vaccinated. I would pay attention to where you're going. And, you know, it's so much about how much disease is in the community around you and what your willingness to wear a mask, the amount of vaccination in the community around you as you're where you're going. So much of this now is local. And so that's really probably where I would land with regard to going and where you go.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so who pitched you on the CDC job and what lies did they tell you?
We used to say about chief residents when I maybe I shouldn't say this, when I was a House officer, that you had to be smart enough to get it and dumb enough to take it.
Right.
It was this very narrow window.
Yes, I resemble that a little bit, I have to say.
You know, once it became clear that when I got the phone call, obviously I was completely honored and completely an unexpected call. And then I had sort of this desensitization process that is the vetting. And then it was just, there was no. I mean, like, I'm called to help. And when you're called to help in the middle of a pandemic, that's what you do.
What did they tell you about the job? What did you think it would be? Versus, like, how do you compare that to the reality?
So it's no surprise that I haven't been in politics before and I haven't been in the government before. They're navigating that is, I mean, just navigating the stinking acronyms right. and sign-off processes and things like that has been eye-opening. It's opened a network of ways you can and should get things done, and it allows for an opportunity to make a difference and an impact at a much higher level. I knew I needed to do more in communications. We in CDC needed to do more in communications. And so that has been a learning process as well. I have spent less time than I would like so far inward looking at the agency, because there's been so much outward work in COVID and in the response, in our response in the agency and in communications, and making sure the country knows we're scientifically sound, that our decisions are being made on science. I'm really excited for a chapter of this where we are not 24/7 on COVID.
Right. You know, in some ways, the CDC director job kind of became a different thing than it was before, in large part, obviously, due to the pandemic. You know, and in some ways, like I think of the Fed chair person who everything they utter is reprinted 1,000 times, picked apart, written backwards, put in Pig Latin, translated in 75 languages, studied, and reprinted everywhere.
And they just said, I want coffee.
Right, exactly.
In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. My son, who is following a lot of the news, texted me and said, Walensky said X. And it was something that was just awful. Like, I couldn't have fathomed that I had said this. I mean, I know I talk a lot in a lot of different places, but I was like, I swear I never said that. Like, where did that come from? And he texted back and said, The Onion.
The Onion. Oh. Well, actually, it's a high honor to be in The Onion.
Right. Well, he thought so. I was like,
that's great. I mean, I don't know if like you're like cringe when SNL comes on, like, please don't. they did a thing about the dating app thing we did on SNL.
Yes. Crazy. I do sort of feel like once a week on Sunday, like, did I come out unscathed on this?
The White House announced that several dating apps, including Tinder, OkCupid, and Hinge, are launching a new feature that will let people show their vaccination status. But you can't believe everything you see on a dating app. I mean, my Tinder profile says I'm a white architect named Craig.
But the thing that, like, we've been talking about this week, and we talked about it with Jen Psaki on Monday, is this idea of how to reestablish public trust in an era when it's been broken, when we're all suspicious, when we're all tribal, right? We identify with our party, and if you're appointed by a different party, well, you're suspect. When we're suspect of experts in general, because guess what? We could find occasions when experts said something incorrect, it turned out to be incorrect. Therefore, they don't know what they're talking about. Therefore, I know what I'm talking about, and I have only a guy on Twitter with two thumbs and an opinion, or a Fox News show, whatever, either way. But that whole element, which is something that, you know, I think you and I and Tony Fauci and Jeff Zients have tried to approach together. How do you reflect on how to recapture this idea that the public can trust what they're hearing?
First of all, I think we should acknowledge that trust comes with time. Like, you can't sort of just appear and have somebody trust you. And my roots are in patient care. And when I try and establish trust, like, I'm about to tell you what I would do as a clinician in your situation when you're lying vulnerable without clothes on in that bed. And this is what I think you should do. Now, how do you believe me? Why do you believe me? Here's my card. Talk to other people. Get a second opinion. That's kind of what we do in healthcare. And so I've tried to bring that to the public, to say, this is what we know. There are plenty of things we don't know. I'll update you when we know them. And this is complicated. And I get that. This is the science as we know it so far. This is what I would do. This is what I would have my family do. And in fact, even with vaccination, as I've been out there talking about vaccination, I actually don't want to convince you to get vaccinated. I want to convince you to be informed enough that you want to get vaccinated. And that there's plenty of ways that we can do that. Because who am I to make this decision for you? You should make this decision for you. But let me give you the information to empower you to make it.
I love that. It's a level of respect for people, whether they're when they're patients or when they're experiencing a public health crisis that they really need guidance on, that you'd say we still can tell people the truth, treat them like adults, talk in a very four-square way about, are there side effects? Yes. Are they uncomfortable? Are they worth it? Let us talk you through and give you facts and data. That's why you need to be extraordinarily careful. One thing I've learned during this public health crisis, which you've probably always known, is that words can be medicine. In other words, when you don't have a vaccine or a therapeutic, what you hear, how you hear it, and how that causes you to behave is the science we have. So we call them NPIs, but the truth of the matter is that we're used to thinking, I think, of communication from a Washington standpoint as what goes on top of policy. It's how we either spin things or how we help people conceive of things or understand things. Whereas it's actually, in many ways, it is the substance itself. And one of the things I found so challenging about the Trump administration is that in kind of Washington era kind of spin, deflect, all these things that people do in Washington that are bad in normal times can be dangerous at a time when those are the public health instructions that people are getting.
I'll reflect on two stories. When I was a medical student, I will never forget this. I was really early and I really didn't know what I was doing very well. And I went into a patient room and I said, I'm going to take your vital signs. And this patient thought I was taking away his vital signs.
Hmm. That's cruel.
Right. Well, it was my intent. But it really does, like, that communication matters so much. And we're trying to convey really complex things to people who are not used to speaking healthcare language. And, you know, as much as you and I are out there talking about who should get vaccinated and why should they get vaccinated, I was at a vaccination site last Friday with the vice president. And I had the great privilege of talking to some of the people who were there to get vaccinated. And I asked two gentlemen who were waiting, do you know anyone who's been vaccinated? And both of them said no. Hmm. They don't know anyone who's been vaccinated.
Right.
And so, you know, when you think about how we're doing the outreach to that community, we just have more work to do.
Right. Either everybody you know has been vaccinated or nobody you know has been vaccinated. One of the things that felt like the first time, we're going to start wrapping up in a couple minutes because I know you've got to run. When we were in the White House, it felt to me to be most important was good, bad, or indifferent to let the scientists speak for themselves unfettered, to let the CDC establish its own repertoire with the public, the MMWRs, which are the papers that you release of analysis of what's going on, you know, your direct communication personally and other people in the agency. Likewise, Dr. Fauci, mm-hmm. Likewise, the FDA. And, you know, I get asked all the time, was it a mistake to recall Johnson & Johnson or pause Johnson & Johnson? Do you regret when the CDC said X or Y or Z? And I can't help but think I couldn't possibly regret it, even if I didn't love the fact that Johnson & Johnson's paused, because in the larger picture, we are reestablishing the role of these institutions, which are our gold standards, to do their jobs unfettered by politics.
Yes, absolutely. Maybe I'll just unpack a little bit of that and say, you know, I'm not going to say that I haven't made mistakes in the last 5 months and there's been a learning curve. Are there things that I wish I had done a little bit differently, have learned from and certainly grown from? And I think that's true of us as an agency in the last, you know, during this pandemic, we all, you know, you don't have to be sick to be better. We can all be better at how we're doing what we're doing. But I can say, you know, that time in March where we saw the increasing cases, I was really worried. I just couldn't face going back to where we were. And I was able to voice that. It wasn't a popular opinion at the time. People were not happy to hear it, but I was able to voice it.
When I first started at CDC about 2 months ago, I made a promise to you. I would tell you the truth, even if it was not the news we wanted to hear. Now is one of those times when I have to share the truth and I have to hope and trust you will listen. I'm going to pause here. I'm going to lose the script and I'm going to reflect on the recurring feeling I have of impending doom. We have so much to look forward to, so much promise and potential of where we are, and so much reason for hope. But right now, I'm scared.
Johnson & Johnson, people were having a severe, it was extraordinarily rare, but we needed to get the word out.
We didn't know it was the rare. It could have been less rare.
And what I'm really proud to say after that, nobody to my knowledge has gotten heparin since we made that out.
That is fantastic. And that's why that happened. I didn't realize that. But, you know, there's a lot of hindsight bias, right? Which is to say, oh, why did you close down when there were six cases? There could have been 600. There could have been,
right.
They could have come in, you know, started to come in very fast. What I say is that there's a lot of scientific phenomenon that aren't logical to the way we're used to perceiving things. Asymptomatic spread. It defies what we could see with our own eyes. Exponential growth. It's not logical. So for you to in March to say, you know what, this could go either direction and I'm worried, and then have it go the right direction afterwards, in some part is an affirmation that you were doing your job right. And by the way, that's how the math works. The math goes up very fast or it goes down very fast. And if it goes down very fast, you look like, well, you're overreacting. If it goes up very fast and you didn't do that, then you look like you missed something. Mm-hmm. And you've got to choose. And this is what experts on TV who don't have to make the decision don't always understand, is they don't have to live with the results of that decision. Having run an agency, I tell you that to some extent, you've got to tune out so much. You've got to listen, of course, as you said, to improve where you think you need to improve and all that. But you have to also be able to tune out what people think, because in the end of the day, what you said led to lower deaths and a better recovery. And that's your true north.
That's exactly right. And really, the question I always ask is, if I'm wrong in this decision, what happens? You know, and which way do you want to be wrong? And I was not going to be wrong in having more deaths from this disease.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between.
Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us.
So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Dough, where cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, season two is here. Hosted every week by me, X Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season two of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Can we talk for a second about the role of someone who works in public health? And I'm going to preface it this way. Up until the pandemic, people would talk about and reward the physicians that solved acute problems when we had them. Surgeons, God love them. They make a lot of money. Specialists, you know, if you want to go into healthcare and make a lot of money, that's what you do. What you don't do, if you want to make a lot of money, is go into things that prevent illness, whether it's primary care or family medicine, or public health. You know, I talk to people, you know, public health, they're not getting a lot of grants from pharmaceutical industries. They're not getting a lot of grants from government. And what they're doing are things that are preventing tens and thousands of us from having bad things happen to us and making our world better. But it's yet every year underfunded, depreciated, paid less. And the people I find who work in this area are such extraordinary professionals and people of such intelligence and goodwill. CDC is filled with those like none other. How have you found the people and how have you found the challenges that they've faced since you've been at CDC?
Yeah, it's really been extraordinary for me. You know, I came from academia and from some of those places that had, you know, physicians who were, as you talk about, and truly also pretty selfless researchers and physicians. So yes. When you go to CDC, when you talk to folks about public health, it works when you don't hear about anything. You know, public health is working for you when there isn't an outbreak, when there isn't an environmental hazard, when there isn't all of these challenges. That's when you know it's working and that doesn't get funded. And there are no heroes in the people who prevent everybody else from getting sick because you don't know about it. But that work happens every single day from tireless people, tens of thousands of people at the CDC. If you really look at the public health of this nation, 60,000 public health work jobs have been lost in the last 10 years. And that's because it's underappreciated, it's underfinanced, these folks are overworked. And there aren't enough resources to keep people in it. And we just had an MMWR that demonstrated the anxiety and depression of people in this public health workforce to the tune of 35 to 40% over the last year, 8 to 9% with suicidal ideation over the last year. They are carrying the burden of making sure we as a nation, as a globe, are healthy. And so I think we just need to listen to that and to make sure that we have the resources to protect the people who are protecting us.
So a third of people who are working in public health have some form of anxiety or depression or some other
PTSD,
right? Some other burden that they're carrying. And you know, 10% or a third of them have much more significant concerns and potentially at risk. Now that we acknowledge that, do you have a sense of what the path is to fixing that, the important things we can do?
I think we can acknowledge the efforts that they've put forward. Certainly, I've been trying to do that inside the CDC. The CDC over the last year did not get a lot of support or just even kudos for the work that they were doing. And certainly, not everything was perfect. And I'm going to acknowledge that as well. But there were, you know, thousands of people who were working to protect us. And so I think we should acknowledge that resources will be helpful in the years ahead. We need those resources because we just need a bigger pool of people doing public health. The current standard of people doing it, we need to scale them up. We need to, there's so much that we need to do to develop that workforce, even at the community level, especially at the community level. That may be part of the reason that, you know, people in certain communities aren't getting vaccinated is because they don't know anybody in public health. They don't know a single person who works in healthcare. So, you know, I think that there's a lot we can do both in bolstering the workforce, in providing resources to make sure that they're upskilled and uptrained, and then just acknowledging that the work they're doing to protect us all.
Let me give you one bit of hope. I think that's so important. And when I took over CMS, it was right after the healthcare.gov failure. And the morale of the agency, which is evaluated every year, was the lowest of any agency in the entire federal government. And I was there for 2 years and spent a lot of time focusing on a lot of the initiatives that I suspect you're thinking about and focusing on now at CDC. And the survey that was done right before I left was CMS was the second highest of the entire federal government. And so there's something about rate of change going from that, it's almost easier to go from worst to first than it is from sort of middle of the pack, because people really notice the effort. And, you know, I think we've got work to do in this pandemic. I'm not suggesting it's over, but what I'm saying is the idea of your tenure being one where when you leave at the end of this, you've got a rocking and rolling, ready for business, fully appreciated, energized staff, feels like we all ought to do everything we can, and I certainly will, to support you in getting there.
That's going to be my goal, man. That's going to be it. Thank you.
Well, there's a team. If anybody deserves it, it's a team at CDC who are really just they're such beloved and talented people.
Thank you.
Well, let's close. I just have to say this. You're an extraordinary colleague and friend. The CDC is very blessed to have you, but I found working with you, and everybody does, to be in just such a great experience because you're real, you're honest, you're focused on getting things done. You made all of us feel part of your collaboration process when we asked you questions, which was very generous. And then you're funny and you're fun, and I think that showed, and I think, I mean, a lot of the reaction from people that I know were like, oh, a real person who's talking to me, this is, I didn't know this could happen. And so I just want to thank you for that. You've got such a challenging job, and I am so in your corner because you run one of the most important agencies in the world.
Thank you so much, Andy. Getting to know you and becoming a colleague and friend of yours has truly been one of the gifts of the last 5 months for me. Thank you.
And there haven't been a lot of gifts. Okay, thank you, Dr. Walensky. Let's take stock of where we've been. We've gone through first part of our series, a little bit of reliving the past and taking the lessons from the past. That was last week. This week, we talked about rebuilding trust. Next week, we have two great episodes about where are we now. The first is our game show, Safe or Unsafe, with Caitlin Rivers and Farzad Mostashari. On Wednesday, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former head of the FDA, really smart person. And we're going to dive into the facts of kind of where are we with this pandemic. That's week three. Then week four is we're going to start to talk about people who've not been vaccinated, why they haven't been vaccinated, what the issues are. So Monday, Dr. Lisa will be out in the field talking to people who have been vaccinated, and we will hear from the premier pollster in the country on the subject of vaccination, Wally Brody. And then on Wednesday, political pollster Frank Luntz, who's been running focus groups with unvaccinated people and has a ton of insights for us. So that's what we'll cover next. Have a great 4th of July. Thanks for listening to In the Bubble. Hope you rate us highly. We're a production of Lemonada Media. Chrissy Pease and Alex McGowan produced the show. Our mix is by Ivan Kuriev. Jessica Cordova Kramer and Stephanie Whittleswax still rule our lives and executive produce the show. And our theme was composed by Dan Malad and Oliver Hill, and additional music by Ivan Kuriev. You can find out more about our show on social media at Lemonada Media. And you can find me at aslavitt on Twitter or at andyslavitt on Instagram. If you like what you heard today, most importantly, please tell your friends to come listen. And please stay safe, share some joy, and we will get through this together.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Last Day is a show about the moments that change us.
I just don't think I will ever get used to this.
I'm Stephanie Whittleswax, and I have had one of these moments. We all have. So let's unpack the chaos that is our human existence together.
I don't believe things happen for a reason. I don't believe the universe has a plan.
Each week, I sit down with a new guest to explore happy, sad stories of transformation.
It's leaning far into the pain. That's what it is.
Listen to Last Day wherever you get your podcasts.